revived, and the blue and green factions continued to afflict the reign of Justinian and to disturb the tranquility of the Eastern Empire.
A conspiracy against Justinian coincided with Belisarius's return to Rome. Justinian's nephew Germanicus took command of the emperor's principal army. Germanicus died in a brief campaign against Totila. Command of the army then passed to the eunuch Narses, who Gibbon says, a feeble, diminutive body concealed the soul of a statesman and a warrior. Narses was a favorite of Justinian, who gave the eunuch the key of the public treasure to conduct the wars against the Goths with all that was needed. Narses fought in France and Italy and took Rome once more for Justinian, killing Totila in the process.
About 2 years after the last victory of Belisarius, the emperor returned from a Thracian journey of health or business or devotion. Justinian was afflicted by a pain in his head, and his private entry countenanced the rumor of his death. Before the third hour of the day, the baker shops were plundered of their bread, the houses were shut, and every citizen with hope or terror prepared for the impending tumult. The senators themselves, fearful and suspicious, were convened at the ninth hour, and the prefect received their commands to visit every quarter of the city and proclaim a general illumination for the recovery of the emperor's health. The ferment subsided, but every accident betrayed the impotence of the government and the factious temper of the people. The guards were disposed to mutiny as often as their quarters were changed or their pay was withheld. The frequent calamities of fires and earthquakes afforded the opportunities of disorder. The disputes of the blues and greens, of the orthodox and heretics, degenerated into bloody battles. And in the presence of the Persian ambassador, Justinian blushed for himself and for his subjects. Capricious pardon and arbitrary punishment embittered the irksomeness and discontent of a long reign. A conspiracy was formed in the palace. And unless we are deceived by the names of Marcellus and Sergius, the most virtuous and the most profligate of the courtiers were associated in the same designs. They had fixed the time of the execution. Their rank gave them access to the royal banquet, and their black slaves were stationed in the vestibule and porticos to announce the death of the tyrant and to excite a sedition in the capital. But the indiscretion of an accomplice saved the poor remnant of the days of Justinian. The conspirators were detected and seized with daggers hidden under their garments. Marcellus died by his own hand, and Sergius was dragged from the sanctuary. Pressed by remorse, or tempted by the hopes of safety, he accused two officers of the household of Belisarius, and torture forced them to declare that they had acted according to the secret instructions of their patron. Belisarius appeared before the council with less fear than indignation. After 40 years' service, the emperor had prejudged his guilt, and injustice was sanctified by the presence and authority of the patriarch. The life of Belisarius was graciously spared, but his fortunes were sequestered, and from December to July he was guarded as a prisoner in his own palace. At length his innocence was acknowledged, his freedom and honors were restored, and death, which might be hastened by resentment and grief, removed him from the world about 8 months after his deliverance. The name of Belisarius can never die, but instead of the funeral, the monuments, the statues, so justly due to his memory, I only read that his treasures, the spoils of the Goths and Vandals, were immediately confiscated by the emperor. Some decent portion was reserved, however, for the use of his widow, and as Antonina had much to repent, she devoted the last remains of her life and fortune to the foundation of a convent. Such is the simple and genuine narrative of the fall of Belisarius and the ingratitude of Justinian. If the emperor could rejoice in the death of Belisarius, he enjoyed the base satisfaction only 8 months, the last period of a reign of 38 and a life of 83 years. It would be difficult to trace the character of a prince who is not the most conspicuous object of his own times. But the confessions of an enemy may be received as the safest evidence of his virtues. The resemblance of Justinian to the bust of Domitian is maliciously urged, with the acknowledgement, however, of a well-proportioned figure, a ruddy complexion, and a pleasing countenance. The emperor was